CEOs, civic leaders, entertainers, and entrepreneurs. They all have something in common: the drive, vision, and heart to achieve success. Steve Klein is a renowned business consultant, author, and host of Playmakers Talk Show. Each week, he introduces you to fascinating personalities who will inspire, educate, and motivate you to persevere and find your own success. And now, here's Steve Klein.
An unknown author said, "Success comes to those who make things happen, not to those who let things happen." Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today are two playmakers who make things happen. Our first Playmakers company has 3,500 square feet kitchens with 200 team members working in each. Well, our next Playmaker is the managing editor of the Bible of Texas Football. With us today is a CEO whose company is built on three basic principles: simple, honest, and natural ingredients. Well, our next guest is a high school football analyst for Fox Sports Southwest. These great playmakers are Ian Baines. Ian is president and CEO of Cheddar Scratch Kitchen. And Greg Tepper. Greg is managing editor of Dave Campbell's Texas Football. And we're going to begin today's show with Greg. As I mentioned, Greg is the managing editor of Dave Campbell's Texas Football, the Southwest's leading football source since 1960, and the Bible of Texas Football. He's also a high school football analyst for Fox Sports Southwest, including co-hosting Fox Football Friday, the network's live Friday night high school football show. Greg Tepper joined the staff in March of 2011 and works on both the annual magazines and DCTF's multimedia platform. He handles the bulk of DCTF's web material and produces its podcast. Greg is also the host of the Dave Campbell Texas Football Radio Hour on the Texas State Networks and DCTF Live, a daily live show covering football in Texas on TexasFootball.com. Well, Greg, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Steve, thanks for having me, my friend.
You've been with Dave Campbell's Texas Football for a few years. What brought you to Texas Football?
Well, first and foremost, I'm a Texan, and that helps. I'm from Coppell, outside of Dallas, and sports has always been kind of in my blood, and it was the kind of thing that in high school I tried to find a way that I could trick somebody into paying me to watch sports all the time. And
you got paid to do what you really enjoy.
Right? Isn't that the goal? And so went to school at Missouri and studied journalism, ended up coming back home, and I got a job with the Dallas Morning News. And when this job kind of came open, a job at Dave Campbell's Texas Football, I leapt at the opportunity because as a former high school football player, not a very good one, but a high school, they gave me a jersey. Doing that, I'd always known about this magazine. I'd always known the legacy that it had and the importance that it had in the state. And so I loved the opportunity, and it's been a dream come true. It's really, in a lot of respects, my dream job.
Well, let's talk about the legacy. Dave Campbell started this in the early 60s. Mm-hmm. How did it start? I mean, Texas has always been football. When you think football, you think Texas and vice versa. But sure. How did he start the magazine?
Well, in 1960, Dave Campbell, who was the sports editor at the Waco Tribune down there in beautiful Waco, he's a big Baylor supporter, and he was a big fan of football, and he said, you know what, I don't think that the Southwest Conference is getting the kind of national play that it really deserves. And so he decided to start a magazine that focused on the Southwest Conference.
Which was primarily Texas.
Of course, yes, with Texas, Houston, Rice, Texas Tech, TCU, SMU, all those teams, all the Texas teams. And so he decided to start Dave Campbell's Texas Football, or started Texas Football. We had to convince him to put his name on it a little bit later. But in kind of, I think, a very forward-thinking move, he said, you know, we should cover the what he called the schoolboy teams at the time as well. And so that first magazine, I believe it was 96 pages, and it previewed as many high school teams as he could find information on in all the Southwest Conference. The magazine is now, we just published our 57th annual summer edition. It is now 400 pages. It previews more than 1,400 high schools, as well as the 12 FBS teams in the state. As far as college is concerned, that's the top level, your Texases, your A&Ms, your Houstons, as well as drilling on down to the lower, FCS, which includes Sam Houston State, all the way down to junior colleges. So if you play football in the state of Texas, we cover you in the magazine.
I mean, talk about statistics. There's a lot of information. A lot of time goes into putting that together.
Yeah, we start putting this thing together and the quote-unquote Bible of Texas football in February. We start kind of kicking around ideas of who we're going to put on the cover, what are the main features, the main elements we want to do. And then we got to get to work on getting all that information in. As I mentioned, it's 400 pages, and we've got to put it all together in about 5 months because we want to have the most accurate information in there. And sometimes you get a little bit of a curveball thrown your way. For example, this past year, I remember walking into the office. We're 6 days to press. I'm actually feeling pretty good. This is my sixth summer magazine, so I know the schedule you're supposed to be on. Kind of cruising along, coming to the office, and all of a sudden my Twitter starts blowing up that Baylor's about to fire Art Briles, their head coach, because of the scandal going on down there at Baylor. Let me tell you, Art Briles' name is all over that magazine. So then we have 6 days to clean it up and try to reflect the information that we have. It's a struggle, and it is a I tell my friends that the month of May you just won't see me. I go into hibernation, but it is a it's a really honestly very fulfilling feeling whenever you finish this magazine, because we know how much it means to people across the state.
Oh, it's almost like putting together a complete Yellow Pages. Every single piece of information is in that 400-page manual. You must be doing a lot of phone calls, a mm-hmm. lot of emails, a lot of things back and forth to a lot of coaches. How do you handle all that?
It's you know, you've got to stay organized. To me, that's the biggest thing. And what I learned very quickly in this job is that the only way that you can kind of wrangle this beast is by having a plan of attack. And so you're right. We're dealing with more than 1,400 high school coaches, let alone all those college teams. Put aside the college teams for a second. Just look at the high school section. We have to put together, you know, 1,400 high school teams, and each team gets their own individual preview. Whether you're the Allen Eagles, who have an enrollment of 6,000, or you're the Benjamin Mustangs, who have an enrollment of 11, you get a preview in the magazine. And so it's a lot of we send a questionnaire to all the coaches in the state, and most of them are very good about getting it back in on a prompt in a prompt manner, because they respect the magazine. They know what we're trying to do with them. Some of them we have to chase, and some of them we're chasing up until the final buzzer. But it also helps to build a relationship with the coaches, which is so important to what we do. Texas high school football coaches are the lifeblood, really, of what we do. And so while sometimes we have to get on them a little bit to turn in their information and tell us how many offensive starters they have returning, in the end, it's a net positive, because we do maintain that great relationship with coaches.
I can see why, too. Over 57 years, they know this is the magazine sure. they need to be in. And let's talk about that. You've gone from 95 pages, 400 pages over 57 years. What has changed? How has that evolved over that time?
Well, everything's kind of changed in the regard that we've got more of an emphasis. I wouldn't say a full emphasis, but more of an emphasis on stuff that people are interested in, like recruiting. Recruiting has become such a huge part of football all across the nation. People are very interested in it, so we've tried to increase that. But I think what's happened most about the Dave Campbell's Texas football brand is that we've tried to expand it beyond the magazine. You know, it's an odd you would be very hard-pressed to find a successful business that puts out one product a year and maintains its status at the top. So we've had to evolve, and we've had to change it. You know, you mentioned a little bit earlier that we've launched DCTF Live, which is on texasfootball.com. It's a daily live show talking about football in Texas, because there is that appetite for it. Our goal is, we know that our magazine, the summer edition of Dave Campbell's Texas Football, starts the conversation. What we need to do is build that conversation year-round around what we do. So at texasfootball.com, on social media, on all sorts of things, we try to find a way, whether it's the TV show on Fox Sports Southwest or the radio show on the Texas State Networks, we try to find a way to maintain our spot as the conversation starter and the conversation maintainer, if you will.
You're expanding your brand mm-hmm. by using multimedia to promote your print media product.
It's the only way. It's the only way, because otherwise what would happen is that this magazine comes out in June, and then really a lot of the information in there, because it is a preview magazine, the season starts at the end of August, beginning of September. It becomes, every day that after we put out the magazine, it becomes less relevant, right? And so we've had to try to adapt, and it's the same thing that's going on in all print media, is that you're trying to find a way to adapt to stay relevant. And I think we've done a really good job of staying ahead of the curve and trying to make it so that we are relevant, because this matters to people. This is the kind of thing that there is an appetite for. And I'll tell you, I get asked the question all the time, how in the world do you have a print magazine that is actually growing in readership. And, you know, credit to Dave Campbell for having being the visionary that he was back in 1959, 1960, and saying, you know what? He gave us the blueprint. It's our job to help that blueprint evolve with the changing landscape.
Well, you are a Texas native, and as I mentioned at the top of the show, people tend to think, when they think of Texas, they think of football. Your take on football, this is a passion of yours. Mm-hmm. What's going on in Texas with football from high school all the way up to the NFL?
I think that what you're seeing is the new era of football coming in. First and foremost is that I think rightfully safety is taking more and more of a front and center approach. You're seeing it from the high school level all the way up to the NFL, that safety, especially when it comes to head injuries, is becoming more and more of a topic of conversation. And that's good, because the only way that this sport survives is if we are proactive about maintaining its safety. The other thing is that what's so incredible about football and resilient about it is that there has been a lot of negative press because of the safety issues, but football is just becoming more and more popular, especially, I think, at the high school level. When you talk to folks maybe from outside the state who have maybe seen Friday Night Lights, okay, the TV show or the movie, or they've read the book.
Which did a good job in portraying how people feel about Texas football.
I think that's accurate. And they'll ask me, oh, is it really like that? I mean, it's overblown. I'll say, come on down. So the state championship games are going to be at AT&T Stadium in Arlington in December, the week before Christmas. Go there. They're going to play 12 games across 4 days at AT&T Stadium. And they will draw probably close to 250,000 people to come in and watch that game. The passion about football has never been stronger, especially here in the state, because I think that with the growth of social media and with the growth of awareness, people are realizing, you know, some of the old school things with the growth of technology have kind of fallen by the wayside, but football has this very cohesive element to it that it brings us all together and says, this is something we can all sit here and enjoy. And it's really remarkable from my perch to be able to sit here and kind of watch the whole state. You know, you've never seen anything quite like going down to the Rio Grande Valley and seeing El Coach Elsa, La Máquina Amarilla, come out to a crowd. And El Coach Elsa, I really hope there's no Yellow Jackets fans listening. They're not a great team. They've never won a state championship. They've never really come close to playing a state championship. Every Friday night, that stadium is jammed with 16,000 people screaming their heads off for these 17-year-old boys who are representing their team.
It's for the kids rather than the win or the loss.
Exactly right. And I think that that's what's so remarkable, and I'm really honored to just be a small part of it.
Well, tell everybody how they can find out more about Dave Campbell's Texas football.
Absolutely. You can check it out at texasfootball.com, where you can find all sorts of fun stuff year-round. Like I said, we're really emphasizing our video stuff. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/Dave Campbell's, and they can follow us on Twitter at DCTF.
Well, Greg, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show. You are a playmaker.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Wow, that's the nicest thing anyone's ever said about me.
Greg Tepper is the managing editor of Dave Campbell's Texas Football. Again, texasfootball.com. Don't go away. We're going to talk restaurants and food with the CEO of Cheddar Scratch Kitchen. His name is Ian Baines. Back with Ian right after this.
Operation Kindness is the original and largest no-kill animal shelter in North Texas, having saved more than 80,000 cats and dogs over almost 40 years. On a day-to-day basis, Operation Kindness cares for approximately 300 cats and dogs, with another 150 in foster homes. In the past 12 months, more than 4,200 homeless cats and dogs have received medical care, clean shelter, nutritious food, and playtime until they were adopted into a new forever home. Go to OperationKindness.org to adopt or foster a dog or cat. Donate or volunteer. That's OperationKindness.org.
Wipe Out Kids Cancer is a Dallas-based nonprofit organization founded in 1980 dedicated to raising awareness and funding for pediatric cancer research on a national basis. Wipe Out Kids Cancer has raised over $4 million in the crusade against pediatric cancer and spent over 30 years developing programs to not only fight childhood cancer, but to also provide hope and support to kids and families battling cancer. Our mission is to work relentlessly for a day when children are living cancer-free. You can help make a difference. Go to WOKC.org to donate or volunteer. That's WOKC.org.
Ian Baines wants people to know that friends don't let friends eat alone. Now, Ian is president and CEO at Cheddar Scratch Kitchen, where he's currently leading the company rebranding efforts from Cheddar's Casual Cafe to Cheddar's Scratch Kitchen. Now, Cheddar's is built on three basic principles: simple, honest, and natural ingredients. Cheddar's believes in doing things the right way, not the easy way, because it tastes better that way. Ian began his restaurant industry career as a fine dining chef working in both Toronto and London for the first 15 years. He's held various roles with Darden Restaurants and Brinker International. Prior to joining Cheddar Scratch Kitchen, Ian was CEO and president at Uno Restaurant Holdings Corporation until October of 2014. Well, Ian, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Great to be here.
Well, you've had an interesting career. Now that you're at Cheddar's, tell us a little about your business that you're doing now and what you do for Cheddar's.
Right. So, first of all, I'm thrilled to have the opportunity to lead this brand. It's a terrific brand with a wonderful legacy. And really, a big part of what we're doing right now is just bringing to life for consumers and guests what we've always been doing, and that is, you know, cooking great-tasting food from scratch. And but now we're taking that message a little more externally. We've changed the name on the building to, you know, now it says Cheddar Scratch Kitchen.
Well, you've had a little bit of a change inside, too. I understand that you have a scratch kitchen that's larger than most and more employees than most.
Tell us
about that and why.
Right. So, to be able to produce food from scratch, you need, extra space to be able to do that. Our kitchens take up about, more than a third of the overall footprint of, our 8,000 square foot.
I heard about 3,500 feet.
Yeah, so it's the size of a small house.
Yes, it is.
Not a small house, a reasonable house. So it takes a lot of space. And then cooking food from scratch, takes time and effort, and takes a lot of people. So you need room for those people to be able to work. And so, as an example, one order of our onion rings takes 6 onions. So somebody's got to peel those onions and slice them up and pick out the...
They're not frozen. You got to start
scratch. Get from a whole onion. So it takes time, effort, and it takes some love. It takes some love and care to produce scratch food.
Love and care. I like those two words put together in what you're
right,
doing. So
right.
How did you get started? I mentioned London. I mentioned Toronto. But give us your background.
Yeah. So I grew up in the north of England. My dad was a butcher. I started out working for him really early on. And I went to culinary school, both in the north of England and then to Westminster College in London, and trained to be a chef with the thought that one day I wanted to teach. And I worked at the Dorchester Hotel in London, which is a great prestigious 5-star hotel, but I was one of 120 cooks, and the kitchen was three stories below ground, and I don't think I ever walked through the front door of the hotel once. So, but a great place to really learn the fundamentals and the basics of what great food should taste like.
Having never been to Europe, I understand that there's a lot of 5-star hotels and very nice or have restaurants in Europe. I would think the competition to be the head chef would be extremely difficult.
I was not the head chef. To be the head chef of a hotel like that would take a long time. So, it was great food, great competition, and then a lot of people come from Europe to work there. So a lot of French chefs, a lot of Swiss chefs. So a lot of competition.
Let's go back to Cheddar's and talk about the founding, because it's 40 years old or so.
We talked about 37 years. Yeah.
So tell us how it got started and what makes Cheddar's so popular based on the dishes.
Right. So when Doug and Aubrey started Cheddar's over 37 years ago, they were very clear on what they wanted to do. They wanted to provide great tasting food with good portions at a very reasonable price, but also to allow folks to enjoy that food in a really nice environment. So they put all of their money into the building and made sure that the ingredients that they were buying were great ingredients. And what then they were able to do, they were able to appeal to a lot of different people. So a lot of folks were able to come and eat at Cheddar's, not only for special occasions, which back then a lot of eating out was for just special occasions. occasions, but more, you know, more everyday type of eating. And so then as they began to grow the brand, they looked to go to places where they would be the, you know, some smaller towns like, you know, Tyler, Texas, as an example, or smaller places, and they will be able to be the best restaurant in that town. Back then, as is today, people are still, when we open new restaurants and they come in and they see this beautiful environment and they eat the food and have the great service, and then they get the bill and they're like, wow. You know, all of that, and that's all it costs.
The surprise is the low bill, not the high bill.
Yeah, exactly. So it has, you know, very, very broad appeal.
Well, you've worked with some of the top restaurant companies in the world. You were with Uno, you were with Brinker's, you were with Darden. Mm-hmm. What did you learn along the way that put you in the right position to run Cheddar's? And what's the key ingredient you're looking for to make it really, really successful?
So, you know, being fortunate enough to work with those wonderful organizations, and you know, a number of things I learned. But one thing that is clear, you know, both at Brinker and at Darden and at Uno, they have great cultures. You know, cultures that have been, you know, built up, you know, over many, many years by, you know, the wonderful leaders that they had in those organizations. And, you know, with that culture, the real focus on having, you know, creating an environment where they're able to attract and retain the very best talent at all levels of the organization. The restaurant business, sort of different than so many other businesses, you know, if it took, you know, 150 people to open a restaurant 37 years ago, it takes 150 people to open a restaurant today. Although, you know, the restaurant industry has embraced technology as much as we possibly can, people are the main ingredient and the most important part. So what I learned from those other organizations and those great leaders was to really focus on building a terrific culture, a terrific environment where people can really, you know, grow and flourish. The other advantage of the restaurant business is that you can really advance very quickly. The other thing about the restaurant business is you can really advance very quickly at your own pace. So, you know, you can start as a server or you can start as a cook in the heart of the house, and you can end up being a manager or a general manager in a very short period of time. So we have examples where we have general managers who are still in their mid-20s running, you know, $5-6 million business. So it really comes down to, you know, choosing those right people with the right attitude and then creating the environment where they can, you know, learn and be the best that they can be.
So I could start at Cheddar's, as you call it, in the back of the house or the front of the house, and regardless of my career path, I could end up running a restaurant.
Yes.
So what do you look for then for that initial person that's just starting out to work at Cheddar's?
Right. So we're really looking first and foremost in terms of the kind of attitude that they have. You know, what is their attitude towards work? What is their attitude towards life? Are they, you know, are they generally a positive person? You know, those things are really, really important because this business is it's hard work. It's hard work. It's long hours. And as my dad said to me when I first started out in this business, he said, don't forget, when everybody else is out enjoying themselves, you're going to be working. So you really have to have a love for people and a love for, you know, being hospitable. And so you really look for those key traits in people, because with you can teach a lot of the other things about the, you know, about our business, whether it's serving or cooking. You know, those things are not overly difficult. They can be taught, but you can't teach someone to have a positive attitude. Now, if they show up with somewhat of a positive attitude, that's where, you know, our culture and environment needs to help them to continue to foster that.
Well, you start out as a working as a butcher's son. Mm-hmm. Was your interest going into becoming a chef was because you didn't want to spend time slaughtering and dealing with the meat but preparing the meals?
Right. It was interesting. Well, my dad had a butcher shop and a bakery, so I kind of worked in both. And I found I kind of like the baking part a bit more than the butchery is. You know, working in a butcher's shop is hard work. You're cold a lot of the time because you're, you know, butchering the meat in a cold room. And, you know, and I really found it with the baking. I kind of had a love for cooking. So I got myself a job, I think, at the age of 13 at the local hotel in the town in the north of England. And, you know, one thing led to another. And then decided, as I said, to go to culinary school.
After culinary school, what got you to the point where you were running restaurants? Was it an event that happened in Toronto?
Yeah, so one of the things about this business, which is terrific, you can go anywhere in the world and get a job. You know, the skill set is pretty transferable, other than, you know, perhaps language. So I decided to start traveling and landed in Toronto and stayed with hotels. I was working for the Four Seasons Hotel in Toronto, great company, running sort of the fine dining restaurant there. And although that was really a lot of fun, the fine dining restaurants in those types of hotels are not meant to make money. They're just there to be kind of the jewel in the crown. You know, they get all their revenue from banquets and rooms and so on and so forth. So I decided, you know what, I want to really learn about the business side of this. So I decided to step out and went into to work at a restaurant and became the chef at that restaurant and then became the you know, the executive chef for that company, and you know, one thing led to another. And in the most part, the one thing leading to another was that, you know, I was very fortunate that you know, some really, you know, good people took an interest in me, and you know, really helped me to you know, to nurture me and to help me to hone, you know, my skills and to hone my leadership skills. So I count myself as being very fortunate that along my journey I bumped into some great people along the way.
Well, that has brought you to Cheddar's. So if someone wants to know more about Cheddar's and find some locations and the menu, where should they go?
Well, they should go to www.cheddars.com and look us up on the website there. And there you're going to find, you know, the whole backstory of who we are. You're going to find everything in terms of our menus, our locations. And for those that are interested in a career within Cheddar's as well, the opportunity to you know, to become part of an ever-expanding team, which includes our growth. You know, it'll tell you where our new locations are opening up, because we continue to grow the brand at a pace that is right for us. Growing a restaurant brand, as I, you know, come back to the main ingredient again, it's all about people. So we have to be able to make sure that we grow the right people at the right time to be able to, you know, continue with the new locations.
And all the information again on Cheddar's is on our website, PlaymakersTalkShow.com. Well, Ian, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show. You are a playmaker.
Okay, thanks so much.
Ian Baines, President and CEO of Cheddar's Scratch Kitchen. This has been a terrific show. I'd like to thank our guests. Our first guest was Greg Tepper. Greg is managing editor of Dave Campbell's Texas Football. And you just heard Ian Baines. Ian is president and CEO of Cheddar's Scratch Kitchen. I'd like to thank both of our great playmakers. Thank you also very much for joining us. Join us also at PlaymakersTalkShow.com. We can get all of our replays and past episodes. That's PlaymakersTalkShow.com. And we're going to be back next week with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join him again next Friday at 3 p.m. for another sit-down with DFW's most interesting playmakers.